Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name's Daniel Wilcox, and today I'm joined by...
I'm Luke Condo over Kate.
And our special guest today is... Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Ian Rubright.
Hi, Ian. So Ian is a UK writer of all things horror. He's the best-selling author of the Hell on Earth series, the Damien Verse series, as well as a host of standalone novels. His work is currently being adapted for graphic novels, audiobooks, and foreign audiences, and he's an active member of the Horror Writers Association, a massive animal lover, and also a right swell dude. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So how are we all doing? How's our week going? Are we being nice and creative?
Well, me and Ian are both ill.
Yeah.
But it's been pretty good. I'm still recovering from the Manchester run a bit. Just done the whole 10K thing, which I'm quite proud of. That took a bit.
I was going to say, Manchester run sounded a little bit like an illness then.
I've got the Manchester runs right now, yeah. That's what you get. That's what you get, a medal, and you get like some special paper, toilet paper. Anyway, it's been good. I'm just getting back into writing. I've just written like the most ludicrous short story I've ever written, called The Penis, which I won't really go into.
I wasn't sure if you were being serious when you put that in Slack.
No, yeah, I really wanted to write like a curse story, like a Drag Me to Hell style story, and I couldn't get it out of my head. I couldn't get it out of my head of someone being cursed with. Sorry, whenever he's in the vicinity of someone, they have the urge to rip his penis off. So it's like, and he's like he's this massive sort of sexaholic sort of guy as well. So it's sort of a play on that, but it's been quite fun to write. What about you, Ian? What have you been working on?
I'm just finishing editing the third book in the Hell on Earth series, so just getting that ready for publication next month. And then I need to take a bit of time off to resume my online self-publishing course.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yes.
But I've got a lot of different things on the go at the moment, and I don't know, I need to pare it back down a bit so I can spend more time writing, but it seems lately I'm doing anything but writing.
Yeah,
you have times like that, don't you? You just seem to fall out of it a little bit and just find yourself overwhelmed with other things.
Yeah, I think it's definitely harder to make money in publishing now, self-publishing. And so I'm just trying to stabilise my platform a little more by having some side businesses so that I'm not so reliant on selling ebooks on Amazon. Because if I'd sort of kept the trajectory that I was on at the beginning of my career, I'd be a millionaire by now, but it seems... You know, each year, each book makes a little bit less and you're having to fight uphill to stay where you are. And I've just found that the extra income I've needed is sort of come from other avenues to keep growing as a businessman, really.
Yeah. Have you looked into I'm sure you have, for like, you know, optioning stuff for films or anything like that, you know, to split the profit pie, as it were, of the books?
I get approached now and then about sort of film adaptations, but they're always very small scale, and I tend to sign contracts with the smaller film people with caveats in that if a studio came along would buy the rights back at a lowish amount that would allow me to still explore my options. But
yeah,
I don't have an agent, so you know, it's kind of, unless someone contacts me about it, it's not really something I've got my foot in the door anywhere.
What about you, Dan? What have you been working on? What have you been doing?
I've had quite an exciting week. So I have finished the second draft of They Remain, which is book two in the Rot series. And that's ready to for your digestion whenever you're ready for it. We put together a publishing schedule for the rest of the year where that should be coming out soon. I won't put a date on it just in case we do decide to change it. And then I've also been doing the final, one of the final read-throughs on Lazarus, which was the second of the two books that we both decided to collaborate on when we first started our crazy project. And I'm happy with it. It's looking good. It's feeling good. Probably going to get it out to some ARC readers soon, get some feedback, and then look at popping it out there. So
yeah,
exciting.
Yeah. So what's your process for collaborations? I mean, I did it once to J.A. Conrath, but when I tried it again with Matt Shaw, I just found it sort of too difficult to get going. So I've only really got the one collaboration, and I'm not generally a fan of it, but it seems to be something you enjoy.
It's a bit different to how we originally plotted out, just because we basically each picked an idea that we liked to roll with. Then we swapped over and the other person planned that book. Then we swapped over and the other person wrote, and then we wrote the first draft based off of the plan. And then we basically just keep swapping backwards and forward on each draft. But what's kind of happened is one of the books needed a lot more work and the other one needed less work. So what, instead of going backwards and forwards in parallels and publishing at the same time, one's kind of continued going. So we've had to stagger the process a bit. But I mean, it was a learning curve for us. We've never collaborated before, but we both seem to enjoy working together. So it just seems to fit for us. But I know that it wouldn't for everybody.
Yeah. Do you do it via email or?
A lot of Skype. Skype and Slack and also the StoryShop app. We've been using that recently. You know, self-publishing podcast guys have put out. That's been quite good. Yeah,
it's good to just illustrate.
Sure.
Yeah, it's good just illustrating actually what you mean via pictures. It's just a nice way to put it all together on StoryShop.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got some questions for you, but before that, we need to ask like a big whoop, like anything you've seen, if you've watched or seen, if you'd liked or read or anything like that. Have you seen anything cool recently?
Well, I can give you something for every media, really, because I consume so much. This week, the main find for me has been I've found on YouTube H3H3. I don't know if you're aware of it, but I've just been watching that constantly. It's a Jewish couple in America. They just basically react to YouTube videos that are basically people scamming, like fake pranks, taking advantage of people, and he just debunks stuff and has a bit of fun. And I've just been watching that all week, and I've just been loving it. It's really, really funny, and it's also, it really debunks some really sort of important things that people should be aware of that are going online, that are going on at YouTube. So that's H3H3 Productions on YouTube, and that's a channel, and you should check it out. It's really irreverent, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
How long are the episodes?
Sorry, carry on.
How long are the episodes?
They range. Some are sort of up to 25, 30 minutes. Some are very short, sort of 5-6 minutes. But they're just all really, really humorous. And he attacks a lot of the pranksters and exposes them as fake and trying to portray, like, there's a prankster that his pranks always make black people look really aggressive. And then he manages to find proof that it's all set up with paid actors and stuff. And it's just really funny as well at the same time. And he does it with his wife, which I like, because I work closely with my wife on a lot of things as well. So I like that dynamic. So that's the main point I've had this week. Book-wise, I've just started reading the Wheel of Time.
Robert Jordan's books,
Which I found it a bit difficult to get into, but it's just started to pick up a bit of speed now. I'm quite into fantasy. Despite I write horror, I tend to read more fantasy at the moment, or historical fiction. So I really like Swords and Sorcery and the Game of Thrones books and stuff like that. I'd like to write in fantasy one day, but the books are so long and they take such an investment of time that I wouldn't be able to churn them out at my normal pace, and financially that might hurt me a bit. So I'm kind of waiting to a point where I'm pretty firmly established financially that I can take the luxury to kind of tackle my own sort of Game of Thrones type series.
Yeah. There seems to be a bit of a trend with that with them. I think just authors in general, I think people are intrigued by the idea of fantasy, because when I first approached writing and went to write my first book, I wanted to write a fantasy, and then I just realised that they are quite heavy going to begin with and moved sideways. But most people I've spoken to have expressed their interest in wanting to write a fantasy series.
Really? I'm knowing that. Yeah, I definitely think there's an investment that you need to put into sort of building a world that you, and all this stuff that you probably won't even use, but you need to have it fleshed out for you to create these convincing worlds. And I think if I did do it, I'd like to put a horror slant on it. So I'd make my, you know, my world's quite horror themed, and I don't know, make some sort of plague ravishing the world. But
yeah.
One day I'd like to do that. Film wise, I watched, is it called Get Out today?
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
It didn't go where I thought it was going to go from tracks and stuff. So, yeah, I like that. It's been a while since I've watched a good horror film.
Yeah. That film, I thought it was, it wasn't like it was incredibly sort of groundbreaking or fresh, but it was so solid and so, it's just a good horror film. It's so rare nowadays. You go and see a horror film and it's just good. It's just a good film. Not like absolute trash or not.
I think nowadays people are forgetting that the fun that's supposed to be involved in horror. Like, I watched a Serbian film a while ago and I just thought,
oh my God, yeah.
I don't know. And I just thought, this doesn't need to be in the world. There's no merit to it. It's just made me feel ill and disturbed and upset. And this isn't
slightly
what horror is.
Ashamed.
It's just like, this is where horror's going. Like, and I take it to a point of where Hostel and Saw is, and I enjoy that because it's still a detachment from reality. But then Serbian film and things are, you know, like that, I'm just like, they don't need to exist. There's no merit to them. They're just horrible. And I think I like the 80s and the 90s horror because there was so much fun involved and, you know, like Evil Dead stuff. It's like you were watching it for the thrill and you didn't want to be left feeling, you know, traumatized at the end of the film, and you don't want to be reminded how horrible the actual world is. You want to face your demons through, you know, the fun of what horror is, which is, you know, the escapism and the absurdity. But I think lately it's, you know, there's too much reliance on these dark and realistic films, and they're just morbid.
Have you got a favorite horror film?
Too many tonight, but I love like things like Demon Night. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's cheesy and stuff, and Evil Dead and things like that, and, you know, the original Dawn of the Dead and stuff. Like, it's just, you know, they're stupid, but those are the horror films that I love, and Critters and things like that.
Yeah.
So, what's your take on the new It film?
Yeah, that looks brilliant. I mean, I do love, you know, I do like really frightening horror films as well, but I don't honestly expect to be attacked by a clown at the end of the day. So, you know, there's still that detachment from reality. But yeah, I am looking forward to that. It looks really good.
Yeah. Okay, so horror is like, I'm guessing the first choice when you started writing, or is this something? Did you sort of try a few different genres, or what made you?
No, I always wanted to write horror. And I think it's only now that I've written so many horror books that maybe I've become jaded by, you know, the genre a little bit, or I've run out of ideas in that genre. They don't come quite as quick, that I'd like to expand a bit. But also as I've grown older, I've come a little bit away from horror and expanded my horizons a bit, probably just being married. I've taken in different types of genres that my wife may have enjoyed and led me to, and you know, horror's not everything I am now, but it is my first joy, and I've built such a platform on horror that I can't really move away from it now, because I'd be betraying all the people who've supported me to get to the point where I am. I have written a few thriller novels, but they don't perform anywhere near as well as my horror books do.
So I mean, what is that, when you first started writing, like, were you like a young kid and you thought, I want to be the next Stephen King, or
it's always been Stephen King as the pinnacle. I started with Terry Pratchett books, but then I did move on to James Herbert and Stephen King and things. I'd say I pretty much always wanted to be a writer. But yeah, Stephen King's obviously the pinnacle for where I'd like to be, but I don't need to gauge my success against Stephen King. I mean, people always say, "Oh, you're going to be the next Stephen King," but really, I'm happy to be 1/10 of where he is. You know, you don't have to be that successful, but the absolute pinnacle of where I could reach, you know, obviously is the guy I'd like to be.
Yeah. When I mean, you've mentioned this already sort of briefly, but your first book, The Final Winter, achieved mind-blowing success from what I gather. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about how it felt when that book came out and how it felt to actually have all the sales that it did?
I don't know, it almost felt like serendipity, I suppose, because I'd walked out on a job because I'd had enough, and I just walked out without any job to go to and things. But I had this book I'd been writing as a hobby in my spare time, just about finished. So I kind of threw it up on KDP out of sort of desperation, because I didn't want to go back to having to be a salesman. And I just wanted my life to change so much, because I was so sick of what I was doing. And, I hadn't finished university and things, and I just felt doomed to spend the rest of my life doing jobs I hated. And I got quite distraught about it. But I'd written this book, and I had so much sort of naive hope on what I could do with it. And I thought about sending it off to agents and doing it all the traditional routes. And when I came across KDP, the fact I could do it so urgently, kind of, it wasn't me acting smart, it was me acting desperate, and I threw it up just hoping for the best. And sort of 6 months later, it was earning me more on its own than I'd been earning in my previous job, and that was 6 years ago, and I haven't worked for anyone else since. So I've been really lucky and fortunate, and everything went my way out of sheer luck. I'd like to think, you know, I wrote a good book, but I'm sure thousands of authors have written good books that have never made them a penny. So I'm really lucky that I stumbled upon KDP at a time when I was desperate enough to, you know, try it at a time when nobody really knew what it was. And I'm also really lucky that I got in at the point where it wasn't overloaded and so competitive, so that I wrote a decent horror book and it just made money by virtue of what it was. I didn't need to market it or promote it or compete with anyone else. I just threw it up there and it got good reviews, and that was all it needed back then. And if I'd done it a year later, I don't know if I'd have managed to get the platform as solid as I did by the time things got a lot tougher. So I'm lucky that by the time things got a bit cutthroat and a lot harder, I'd already established myself enough to kind of weather the storm.
Yeah.
So I just put it down to luck more than anything else. I was really, really fortunate.
Am I right in remembering you saying also that book then got picked up by a traditional publisher as well?
I had offers for it from small American publishers, but I wasn't willing to give it up. But I offered them my second book, Animal Kingdom, which published through them. After 18 months of poor sales with them, I brought the rights back from them, self-published it, and that was the last time I really dealt with an English publisher. The only publishers I deal with now are for sort of foreign rights. But yeah, so I was published briefly, and then I brought the rights back. So I think that sort of says a lot.
So if somebody was to do the same thing now, today, to just put like a well-written horror apocalyptic style book up, you don't think you'll get the same sort of success as...
I don't think, yeah. I mean, there's always outliers and things that make, you know, their own rules. But if you to go by sort of the typical book release, I think you're not going to get instant success, but that's not what it is now. It's not the gold rush that it was. It's an industry, and to sort of, you have to build a business now. When I did it, it was, you know, it was a bit of a lottery. I threw it up there and I was lucky and it sold really well. That's because the industry's matured. It's less like that now. There's less of a gold rush mentality where anyone can make it big. It's all about hard work, persistence, and being a business person. So your first book is your first product. It's not going to set the world alight. You couldn't release a new soft drink tomorrow and be an instant success, but you could release a soft drink and then start to slowly grow the brand awareness and then release a second flavor. And you know, you need to grow your business as an author organically like you would any other business. So releasing a book tomorrow with no presence. It's not going to make you rich overnight, but it's step one in your business, and it's the foothold you need to then start. And you know, it's a process now, and it takes time, but it's still really fulfilling and it's still really achievable. I just think new authors need to bear in mind that it's a longer road, and they need to have a persistent sort of strategy and just keep at it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what we hear nowadays is the whole book a month thing, which I just don't think I'm able to do.
I mean, my daily target Monday to Friday is 3,000 words, and I can hit that generally consistently. A good day I'll do 5, but I've got kids and stuff, and I need holidays off with them, and I can't work the weekends or evenings. And I'm not sure, one of my colleagues writes constantly non-stop, but then he hasn't got kids and things, and his wife works a lot as well, so you know, it fits his lifestyle, but I'd burn out. I wouldn't be able to keep that up.
Yeah, so I mean, it's fair to say that the landscape of self-publishing has changed a lot in the last sort of 6 years. What are the key things that you've seen outside of obviously the increase in indie books online, and how do you think it's going to change in the next 6 years?
I don't know, it's frightening, and I think that's why I'm trying to diversify a little bit with other businesses and ways of making money, just because that's what any smart business does in any industry. You can't always rely on, you know, one product. You look at what happens.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Phones for you, that was a previous industry I was in, selling phones. They went bust overnight because O2 and Orange stopped supplying them, and Vodafone just decided that we're going to sell our own phones now from our own stores. And Phones for You went bust overnight. If they'd sold other products, you know, if they'd gone into televisions or something, maybe they'd still be around. But I think it's naive to hope that Amazon's always going to do what's best. When they first released Kindle Unlimited, it pretty much halved my earnings overnight. It really, really hurt me. I had to weather that storm, and then they changed it again a year later where it benefited me and brought my earnings back up. But it showed me, and it taught me then, that you know, you need to make sure you've got a stable platform. You need to be making money from audiobooks, paperbacks, affiliate sales from things you're recommending, ad revenue on your website, on YouTube, and you know, just expand it out as much as you can so that you can take a dip in revenue here and there. But it's volatile, I think, and you just need to make as much money when the going's good, so that if you know things take a bit of a dip, you can survive a little bit. So if you are at a position where your book's selling really well, then yeah, maybe really work hard and do those evenings and stuff and get as many books out as you can, because something could change tomorrow. But it's up and down, and you just need to prepare for that. And you need to stay abreast of why it's up and why it's down, so that when it does change, you're one of the guys that actually changes with it, rather than you know, complains constantly that you've been screwed, because I was screwed by Kindle Unlimited, but I wasn't one of the people going, oh, it's terrible, Amazon is screwing authors. I just thought, well, this is how it is. How am I going to survive? How am I going to make money? How am I going to make it up? And I released a load of short stories to take advantage of the way Kindle Unlimited was in the early days, and that helped. You know, you just have to do what you got to do. And again, it all goes down to being a business. Like, businesses have to change constantly. And being an author, you're not an artist like maybe you once were, where you were paid up front, you know, and then told you've got a year to write a book at your leisure. It's not what it is now. If you're going to go the self-publishing route, you're a business person before you're an author, because you could be an absolute wonderful author and you'll never sell a book if you don't do the business side right.
Yeah.
So, it's quite nice as well that you brought up the short story project as well, because is that your A to Z of horror?
Yeah, that's basically the compendium of all the stories I wrote at the time to take advantage of the fact that Kindle Limited was just paying a flat rate based on whatever length. And that's what hurt me originally, because I'm a novelist and there was people writing all these short stories just to spam the system and get loads of, you know, borrows. So I kind of had to, I couldn't beat them. So I joined them and I wrote a load of short stories, you know, to get people to keep spamming these Kindle Unlimited payments for me. And then obviously Amazon managed to come up with a better solution, which once again, you know, rewards those who are writing the longer work. So I'm happy with that. So it went back to status quo for me. But in the meantime, I had to work out how the new system operated and then exploit it along with everyone else. And if it changes again tomorrow, then the first thing I'll be doing is putting my, you know, thinking cap on, thinking, so how do I change and adapt with it?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the really important things to highlight, is just that nothing seems more poignant really in like a lot of the interviews that I've listened to or been a part of, other than literally what you just said about how you roll with the punches, you work and adapt and keep moving, because that is the indie life. You can't afford to let yourself get complacent, because at the end of the day, anything could change at any point, and then you've just got to rework it all again. So the fact that you did play along with that and come out with the books and find a way to adapt as an author, and then obviously that worked in your favor, I think that's massively admirable.
Hmm. Yeah. I think that the only consistent thing any author can do is to just keep creating products, keep writing books, because it doesn't matter what changes are coming. That's the one thing that'll probably always be in your favor. So, you know, if the going gets tough, just get your head down and write more books, write more content. The more you've got to sell, the easier it is to make a living. So, I mean, that's the one constant, I suppose, through all of it. And that, you know, that's good, because that's the part of the job we all love. I'd love to spend less time with the business side of things. And when the going's good, then that usually means I can write more. But times like now, it's a little bit lean. So, you know, I'm trying to prop myself up with other things.
What sort of other things are you diversifying into, or to fortify your business?
Well, I've got my online self-publishing course, which I've launched phase one last year, and it covered its costs and made a bit of profit. I'm going to do phase two in the summer and hopefully make a bit more money from that. I make quite a lot of money now from affiliate sales, so linking to Amazon and getting a percentage of things that people buy. I've got sort of 20 emails in my autoresponder on my mailing list, and a lot of those emails sort of send people to sign up for Audible subscriptions, which gets me $5 each time they sign up. Every time I link to one of my books, it's got an affiliate link attached and things. So I've got this constant stream of Amazon affiliate income coming in as well. I also sort of sell things like Pro Writing Aid, which is a tool I use for editing. I sell that to people who sign up for the newsletter on my self-publishing course, and I make, you know, a couple hundred pounds a month from that as well, just from recommending that product and successful sales of it. So I do a lot of affiliate marketing as well now, which the reason it's so good is it's very passive income once you've got it set up. But I'm getting paid for things I was doing anyway, so I'm not having to be a salesman or try and get extra money out of my readers. I'm just, instead of linking to my book as I normally would, I'm linking to it and setting up an affiliate link, so that if they then buy my book that I've suggested they buy, but then also shove a new camcorder in their basket and buy it, I'll get a percentage of that as well. So I'm just monetizing the things I'm already doing. And I was always recommending Pro Writing Aid to my author friends, because I use it so much. I contacted them, got, you know, an affiliate scheme set up. They gave me a 30% discount I could give out as well, which really helped my conversions. And now every time I recommend it, you know, I get some money. And I've set up a YouTube tutorial video for Pro Writing Aid as well. And I've made, you know, about £1,000 from people just randomly falling on that video and buying it.
I think that's something we've ever looked at. I know, Dan, you mentioned it a couple of times, but I've
never
really got my head around the affiliate thing.
We're set up on a dashboard for it, but we just haven't investigated how it all comes together yet.
I'll give you both free accounts on the online course that I do. It goes all into it, so I'll get you both set up on that and you can watch the videos.
That'd be really, really appreciated.
Sounds good, yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool. One of the things that I noticed about you when doing a little bit of digging and research is you have a very, very hungry audience. And I mean, your Twitter account, I think you've got 26,500 followers. You've got an incredibly happy looking Patreon account, and your mailing list. I've been on your mailing list for about a year and a half now. And I'm forever reading the stuff that you come out with because it's engaging and it's interesting. How important would you say it is to authors to engage, not just in mailing lists, but on the social media side? Because I think that's something that a lot of authors tend to stumble on and have a bit of trouble with.
I suppose it depends on your personality, because if you're not very likable, it's difficult. You know, and not everybody is, especially authors. You know, if you haven't got an outgoing personality, there's not a lot you can do about that. But I think a general rule of thumb is you just need to give more than you ask for. If you're on social media constantly asking for people to do you favours, then no one's, you know, going to do you a favour. But if you're constantly on social media doing favours for others, then you'll find that those people will be doing favours for you without you even asking them to, just, you know, because you've done things for them in the past. So a rule of thumb is, you know, even if you're not a very outgoing person, if you're a giving person, you know, then you'll get a lot more mileage out of the relationships you form.
And this is from the guy that gives away 5 novels when you join his mailing list.
Well, yeah, you actually end up getting 7 or 8 by the time you stay on the list. If you stay on, you know, for a full year, I give a couple more away later on. And I also give a lot of free books that my author colleagues have given as well, because they get exposure to my mailing list by giving a book away to my readers. And my readers keep getting free books every month from various authors for staying on the list. So, I give loads of books away, but it hasn't hurt me. I've gone from strength to strength since I set up my mailing list, and it's the main thing that's given me stability. I set it up, you know, when Kindle Unlimited hurt me and I realized Amazon had too much control over what my readers were doing and how they were consuming my work, that I had to start building my own platform. And that's when I started my mailing list. And now I know that when my next book comes out and I release it, I'll get, you know, sort of 2,000-3,000 sales in 3 days, because I've sent that email out of my book, which will send it straight up the charts, and then it'll get loads of organic sales. And I know that because it's happened in my last 4 or 5 books. Before my mailing list, you know, I'd release a book and it was up to Amazon to push it.
Well, yeah. And just as an aside, which of your books would you recommend people starting with? You've got quite a few out there.
The book I'm proudest of, I think, is probably The Gates, which starts the trilogy, which I'm just about to end next month with Extinction. It's, you know, it's a nice epic 3-book series. It's I think it's unique. It's different. It's, you know, it's not zombies or vampires or anything like that. It's pretty unique. So I'm pretty proud of that book, and it does relate to my other books as well. So once you've read that and you then go on to read other things of mine, you'll get some Easter eggs and cameos from other characters and stuff. So because all my books are quite standalone anyway, really, you know, it depends what type of plot you're looking for, because, you know, I've explored a lot of different things. So you've got The Housemates, which is a lot like Saw. I've got Asbo, which is a lot like Eden Lake. You know, it's very true to life horror. And then I've got things like The Final Winter, which is kind of a very biblical type horror. And The Gates is very apocalyptic. Then I've done zombie novels. So really, if you're a horror fan and you think about what subgenre of horror you like, odds are I've probably written a book specifically in that subgenre. So really, people can start anywhere in my books.
Yeah. Cool. So people, I mean, we've generally noticed a lot of people do say there's like a general decline in the horror genre, but I'm sure I've been hearing that for years. Really, yeah. So do you think there's still an audience out there for horror? And do you think there's a place for new writers to find success in that genre?
Yeah, absolutely. I think because it's a niche genre, you're probably going to find it easier finding success in horror than you would in, you know, thrillers or romance or something that's massive and flooded. I think, although I love horror and I love my colleagues and stuff, I don't think there's a massive dearth of talent in the horror industry. So I think, you know, there's plenty of room for some really groundbreaking stuff. A lot of it's, you know, a little bit tired now. There's a lot of zombie stuff about. I mean, I've written my own zombie stuff, and, you know, we need some new ideas. We need some new monsters and things. And I think, you know, there's a lot of room for someone to make the leap. And, you know, Stephen King's not getting any younger. So, yeah, absolutely. It's a thriving genre, and it always has been. And, you know, but it's never been the mainstream success of romance or thrillers and stuff. It's always been a quieter genre. But, you know, that's just how it is. And again, getting your own mailing list and things and building your own platform, you don't have to worry about what's trendy, because you'll always have, you know, your own platform of avid fans. So I don't really see ups and downs in the genre. I just see growth in my mailing list, which happens every single day. Mm.
Yeah.
What is it about the horror genre that does bring you in? I know you mentioned earlier a little bit about sort of the fun behind it, but is there anything specific that brings you the joy in the horror?
I think it's the most cathartic genre. I think I struggled a lot with sort of anxiety and depression as a teenager, which I think is what led me to horror. Because you've got characters in similar situations, although it's, you know, allegorical in that they're dealing with actual monsters rather than, you know, the ones inside their heads. You know, the strength they're finding to battle their demons, you know, it gives you the strength to kind of find a little bit of inspiration and strength. And I think it's very much a humanistic genre that's about, you know, human beings and what we're capable of more than any other genre. And I know it can seem absurd to those who don't love the genre, but I think it's actually it's a very ancient genre, and it's very much tied to our psyche more than, you know, most other genres. And I think you can really gain some therapy from horror. I think if it's done well, you can face some things about, you know, the human soul and understand some things about yourself. And I suppose also there's that feeling of just, you know, you watch someone on screen suffering, it puts your own problems into perspective, even though, you know, their problems of, you know, fighting a monster is a bit stupid. You don't realise that on a subconscious level. You're just equating the two things. So I think when you see a person suffer, you end up being empathetic, and it can sometimes lift you a bit.
Yeah. You just reminded me as well, I read on your blog, you had that post, and I recommend people to go and check it out, the 10 books that scare the crap out of you, or something along those lines.
So
definitely go check that out. I think we're coming towards the end of our questions, and if you've got anything else you want to ask before we do the quick fire round,
let's have a quick look. What piece of advice would you give to horror writers who are starting their journey today?
Visibility is the key, and the best way to gain visibility is with a funnel. So as soon as you can, you want to give something away for free, because it's always easier to find somebody with free than it is to charge them for something and take a risk on you. So get something created that you can give away for free, and then capture that email address straight away. And then you'll then be able to see, you know, in a spreadsheet that you're growing as a business, because you'll be able to go, right, I added 2 people on my mailing list today, 3 people, you know, yesterday, 2 people for that. And you can actually see that you're growing and doing the right thing. You're gaining readers, and there's no guesswork. You're not wondering about how many people Amazon is showing your work to. So get a funnel set up as soon as you can. If you've got 1 book, hurry up and write 2, so you can give book 1 away for free, and that'll lead people onto book 2. And it's all about getting seen, and the best way to get seen is with these freebies, these sort of reader magnets. So that's my biggest advice. That's the thing that works best for me. And what I like about it is it's scalable. I'll still be giving away free books with a mailing list if I'm selling 1 million copies a month. But if I was starting out tomorrow, I'd still be doing that, even if I was only selling 10 books a month. It's completely scalable, so everyone should be doing that.
Fantastic.
That's great. Okay, so the quickfire round. Did you know this was happening? Okay. So we've got like 10 questions to throw at you very quickly, and you've got like 4 or 5 seconds to call it free to answer.
Okay.
Feel free to say anything. Feel free not to say anything. There's, you know, silence is an answer in itself. Okay, cool. Dan, do you want to go first?
Yeah, shoot. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Cool. What's your favorite color M&M?
Red.
Would you rather live in a world where you are constantly thirsty or constantly hungry?
Constantly hungry.
What are you most frightened of?
Spiders and my wife leaving me.
Stephen King or Clive Barker?
Stephen King.
What was the last book you read?
The Malazan Empire books. It was rubbish.
The one person you'd hate to meet?
Donald Trump.
What's your biggest hobby outside of writing?
Video games.
Favourite writer?
Sorry?
Favourite writer?
Favourite writer? Blake Crouch.
What was the best present you've ever received?
My iMac.
Would you come back on the show in the future?
I would be delighted to, yeah.
Fantastic.
So, did you read, I really enjoyed Dark Matter. I read that early this year.
I didn't like it as much as The Wayward Pines, yeah. And Eerie.
I've not read Eerie. Is Eerie a bit more gory, or is it a bit more...
No, it's a bit like that episode of Buffy where no one can leave the house. Have you ever seen that one?
I think so. It's been a long time, but
But no, I did enjoy Dark Matter. It's one of the better books I've read this year.
Cool.
I do like Blake Crouch because his ideas tend to be so original. And again, what, yeah. I said about horrors, you know, we need some new ideas, and I think Blake Crouch is doing well because of that. And so is, you know, the likes of Hugh Howey. Those guys are the ones that came out with something original, which is why they're doing so well.
Yeah.
I also quite like the idea that vampires and werewolves now are more traditionally supernatural as opposed to the horror that they came from.
Yeah, the modern fantasy part of it, aren't they?
I'll probably tackle both of those at some point, but not until I have a unique spin on it, I think.
Yeah.
It's like when I first tackled zombies, I did zombies on a cruise liner with a Groundhog Day twist. It was like, I wasn't going to do it until I had a reason to do it.
Which book is that, by the way?
Seasick.
Seasick, okay.
Which is one of the freebies people can get by signing to my newsletter.
Cool.
Hey, what a plug.
speaking of, where can we follow you and your work?
If you just go to my main website, which is ianrobwright.com.
Cool. Just a quick thanks to the intro and outro music from Disaster Piece, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, our patrons over at patreon.com. Thanks to Dan for being here, because without you, you'd be alone. Join us next time. We're making more noises. And thanks again, Ian, for coming on the show. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.